Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening live with Calling All Leaders and Healers with host Barbara White. Barbara White is a gifted intuitive, holistic therapist, and spiritual teacher. She is the creator of the self-acceptance process and has a master's in transpersonal psychology and eco-psychology, a diploma of homeopathy, and is a published author. Called the Midwife to the Soul, Barbara has ignited hundreds into knowing their inherent worth and facilitated the birth of their innate gifts. Barbara is the owner of the Accepted As I Am Center, certified in advanced auricular medicine, Shambhala Master, Reiki Master, Qigong Practitioner, and is a black belt in Isshin Ryu Karate. Her books, Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful and Self-Acceptance Process in Magnificent You, are available on Amazon. Barbara's drive and passion to teach comes knowing that if someone is willing to look within and grow, they can be a healer and leader to others. And now I would like to welcome to the show Barbara White.
Hi, thank you for joining Calling All Leaders and Healers, where we come to celebrate the love, the beauty, the joy, the capacity for each person on the planet to come into service to others, that each of us have unique gifts, unique talents, or unique joy within us, that when we bring our soul signature or that offering that we feel in our heart to a person next to us, to our coworker, to the person in line, that we can be a healer and a leader to another. It's a radical notion to say that we're more than just the job that we're in, we're more than our limitations, we're more than our suffering, that there really is within every person, whether you call it an impulse, an evolutionary impulse, or you call it a desire to be part of community and to serve, or you call it that love that wants to express out of every person. And to know that we're more than those roles, we're more than these limitations, to let that impulse out is what Calling All Leaders and Healers is about. And that through self-love, through self-acceptance, through our inner work, we can come into service to others, or through community, or through that, as my teacher Michael Beckwith said, through community we build immunity. I'm really excited to have on the show today someone that represents that immunity, that capacity to empower through service and to empower many and to empower projects. Detroit Soup, Amy is, I can't wait for her to tell you about this and to inspire you into greater service and to inspire you into maybe even more hope in the world of what's happening. I think we're really in a place where we need to have hope, to know that change is possible, to know that healing is possible. And Amy from Detroit Soup is really going to, through the projects that she's doing, through what Detroit Soup represents, is I feel going to really inspire many. So I'm excited to host her. I'm excited to promote this work, and grateful, really grateful to have her on the Calling All Leaders and Healers. So last month we had the Human Awareness Institute, and their mission is to bring love to the planet and to let people know that their being, their sexuality is normal and healthy, and how to normalize that, how to normalize sexuality, how to teach people how to connect with other people and to have intimacy. And so the Human Awareness Institute, their retreats are really well formatted now, where they provide the structure and the safe container for people to really explore what intimacy is, to clear some body hate, and to love themselves. So I was really grateful to have Pauline on, who's dedicated 25 years of training and service to bringing that message forward, and she shared her story. And then Peter Ringo, who has been a devotee of Muji and another spiritual path. I can't remember right now, but Peter's really phenomenal in how he's been working, I think, for 30, 40 years with people, thousands of people, and working into accepting their life, their body, their sexuality. So really, if you haven't listened to that show, please check out that show last month. And if you are having trouble connecting with other people and really understanding that intimacy means connection with life, our body, it's not, intimacy is not something that we just do with a romantic partner. It's, you have intimacy with your pet. You can have intimacy with nature. And that's a level of connection, a level of seeing that other person as yourself, which is ultimately freedom, right? When we can not feel so trapped by our own thoughts and our own little story that we've got going on. Last night it was really nice. I have the Third Thursday group, so we had a really wonderful turnout. And it was about letting God be God. And it was looking at conscious surrender and how to move into greater levels of letting go, opening up. And too often we think that surrender is about surrendering to something outside of ourselves, that it's about letting go to some external force. And so we really took time to unpack how letting go to love, letting go to peace, letting go to joy, and how these are not some ethereal concepts, but these are actually qualities of creation. And that we let go to love, we let go to peace, we let go to joy, we allow those qualities of creation or qualities of divine to be activated within our own being. And so we also went through a process last night of activating those qualities through real tangible steps. And so I was really grateful that the work that people did last night and allowing me to facilitate that. If you'd like to check that out, I should have that workshop from last night posted. It'll be Let God Be God, Activating Qualities of Peace, Joy, and Beauty Within Our Being. Should be posted on my website and on my Facebook page so that you can benefit from that workshop. I really just want to get the teachings out there so that people can benefit from them. So thank you for joining Calling All Leaders and Healers. You are tuning in to activate, acknowledge, and open up to potential, right? To possibility, to what wants to be born through you, knowing that creation, that life has a unique song it wants to sing through you, and that every person matters. Every person matters. There's not one person that's more blessed than another person. I think that's very humble to accept that and very actually courageous for people to accept that, because when you really realize that one cell of your body can make a complete you, or one part of nature represents the whole, that you begin to see that there are qualities or is energy within you that can come into service to your family, to your work. But the ego mind, the mind that tries to protect, ego's about, it always wants to protect, it always wants to keep us safe, but it creates walls, right? Initially it's like a bubble, and then it builds a structure around us. But the ego is always going to try to protect or defend, but you let the ego or the monkey mind run you and you'll become the walking dead. So to move beyond the monkey mind or the crazy thoughts that happen in the mind is quite courageous, and to open to possibility. Opening to possibility is a big shift for many people to make, because again, the ego mind is going to say, well, no, I've been stuck in this issue, I've been stuck in this place, and there's no possibility of change. And so that false control, or that this is not going to change, the ego says, good, I'm going to protect you from this changing, I'm going to protect you from facing any growth, because ego wants to keep you static, it wants to keep you stagnant. So to really open the possibility, you have to let go. You got to let go of this false control. Opening the possibility also means letting go of any ways of identifying yourself in these patterns. So psychologically, we all have these patterns that have become part of our identity. So opening up to possibility, opening up to more good in your life, requires a shedding of a limited self-identity. Again, that's why we don't open to possibility as people. And I just say that not to justify that, not to encourage that, but so that you can have compassion for yourself and others. You know, why don't they open to possibility? Why don't they open to change? Why don't they love themselves? Because self-love and opening to possibilities takes a courageous warrior's heart. a warrior's heart, because, again, it's shedding all those limited self-identities. It's letting go of the ego's mind that tries to keep you static and keep things from changing. So understanding a little bit more of why we self-sabotage helps to bring compassion. And compassion is not feeling bad for somebody or sympathy, but understanding they don't understand. And, of course, compassion starts at home, starts in our own heart, of understanding why we don't understand in that moment. Oh, is that why I've gotten in my own way all these years? Oh, is that why I haven't been open to possibility of change? Because I've been so identified as this role, it's been kind of a source of identity. I am my neighborhood. I am these limitations. And so when we can open up, then we can become a contributor to others. We can become a contributor to the neighborhood. We can add to the energy around us. And so the false control that the mind tricks us all into, it's watching that, having a curiousness about it, and being gentle with ourselves. Because the other false control, of course, that the mind does, it's going to ask, why is this here? Why am I feeling this pain? And the mind will create all sorts of reasons of why that pain is there. It's my fault, it's their fault, right? It's the main one. It's my fault, it's their fault. And rather than ask, why is this pain there, process that I teach in retreats and in workshops and to groups and to crowds is learning how to really self-accept, to feel the feeling with non-judgment, non-reaction. But there's many processes that I teach in the self-acceptance process and these teachings to really understand how to bring acceptance and love to those feelings. Instead of asking why, we bring acceptance to it. And then the next step is to ask what wants to emerge. What wants to emerge? What qualities want to be born through me? And when we can ask that question, that empowering question, then that can lead to a new way of walking in the world. Because when we identify ourselves as more of a broader self-identity, then we can connect to others. We can connect to nature. We can connect to service projects. But when we're so trapped in our pain, it's really almost impossible to connect. We're trapped in that little self. We're trapped in that box that the ego creates around us. And so creating those kind of connections, creating that awareness of change is possible, an opportunity. My guest, Amy, who is the executive director of Detroit Soup, is such an incredible light and promoter of that. Amy is, like I said, the executive director of Detroit Soup. She received her MA in theology, emphasizing in popular culture, in 2008 from Fuller Theological Seminary. Detroit Soup is a micro-granting dinner that celebrates creative projects in the city, and has helped Detroiters giving back to Detroiters. Ah, what a great term. Detroiters giving back to Detroiters. Wow. Community serving community. What an incredible statement. They've given over 120,000 towards art, social justice, social entrepreneurs, education, technology, and urban agriculture. The model is now being replicated in over 120 cities around the world. Wow! Amy and Soup have recently been honored as a White House Champion of Change for their crowdfunding efforts and have been featured on the BBC, the front of the Sunday Detroit Free Press and Detroit News, New York Times, NPR, and I'm not done, Fast Company, O Magazine, Dwell Magazine, and NBC Nightly News, among other wonderful publications. While not running Soup, oh wow, she does more. Amy also moonlights as DJ Amy Dreamcatcher. Oh, how amazing is that? With the monthly party. The monthly party, Nothing Elegant is the name of it. So DJ Amy Dreamcatcher with a monthly party called Nothing Elegant. And so I'd like to welcome on my guest, Amy.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm so grateful to have you talking about your work and this incredible service and what you're doing. I'm just really happy to have you on the show. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for having me.
So, Amy, this is quite an incredible offering that you're giving to Detroit. This is an incredible light and leadership that you're holding. I mean, this takes incredible work and dedication and devotion, and it just doesn't happen overnight. And so I would love if you would just share your story of how you were called to do this work, and as much as you'd like to divulge in that, because I know, like when I tell my story of how I've come to serve, it's not unique. It's everyone's story, and so people can get so inspired and understand that this this journey that is so important for people to hear. So, would you share a little bit of your story of how this came about?
Sure. So, I grew up outside of Detroit. In a suburb called Sterling Heights, which apparently now is not letting freedom of religion happen by not allowing a mosque to open up. So, you know,
oh my gosh.
If that says anything about where I grew up, that's interesting. It's a really boring suburb.
Yes.
That has, you know, a lot of racial and religious intolerances, apparently. Very Republican, not very a ton of art, but very safe, you know, I guess if you're a white person. I grew up in the suburb. I left when I graduated high school in 99. I went to a Christian institution that really didn't value me as a woman, that, you know, to be a leader, it was like it kind of accepted, but not really. And then I went to seminary in L.A., loved it. It was very life-changing. Thought I was going to be a youth pastor, but in the middle of seminary, left the church altogether, as I think is a way to feel safe for my own self and my own humanity and my own personhood. But what I loved about what I learned in seminary was about, I asked myself a lot of questions. Was A, like, how as women do we seek forgiveness from, you know, years and years and years of oppression to ourselves and to who we are as women? And the other thing is I asked myself is the question about, was just because religion exists, can we create spaces where all different people from all different walks of life can walk into a space together and see that our values and the things that we believe have a lot more in common than the things that separate us. And so in 2008, I moved back to Michigan, where my mom passed away. She had been suffering with cancer for about 14 years. Moved back to Michigan with a lot of, obviously, grief and mourning. And I think it was also the housing market crash. I thought I'd go back to Los Angeles, but instead I stuck around, and that's really falling in love with the city. I think I was a really broken person, and I think the city was a pretty broken place, and I think it still is. And I think I found myself feeling really safe there, and feeling that I could just kind of explore whatever this next part of my life was going to be. I met a group of artists. We worked on a women's event celebrating women in the arts in Detroit. And through that, our friend Kate had just moved up to Michigan from Virginia. And she had experienced this micro-granting dinner funding art projects in Chicago, also called Soup. And there was a few other cities that were like, hey, we should do it too, funding art in the community. The thing is, in Detroit, about 6 months in, Detroiters were asking, could they pitch ideas around technology or land use around homelessness? And at that point, we weren't getting a ton of art ideas, so we kind of filtered through artists and their pitches at that point. And it really became something so much more outside of ourselves. It became something where the community just really wanted a place to kind of meet their neighbors, hear how people were processing through the community. They were pitching ideas from all different kind of sectors. A year later, a lot of that crew left, and I was kind of I saw the potential that this could be something pretty powerful. And so we kept doing it. And 6.5 years later, we're in 9 neighborhood geographies around Detroit. We have a citywide soup that runs September through June. We empower folks around the world and helping them start their dinners through a guide that you can find on our website. So that's kind of how I got
to
where
I'm at. What an incredible story. And what incredible work. I want to circle back and ask and just see what golden nuggets you found when you said I asked 2 questions and wanted to focus on that one question, which is how do I create a space from people of all different religions that you said feel safe and see that there's a common purpose. What did you find was the answer to that question?
Well, I don't preach anything other than, well, I guess I don't preach anything, right?
Mm.
I create an opportunity and a space for people to walk in the door where they feel comfortable, where there's no forced anything. I don't preach anything, and I give people back their power. In the sense that you've always had it, you can use it, and we empower each other in that space. So folks have who have an idea can submit through our website, DetroitSoup.com, and they can choose to either submit to a neighborhood or to the citywide. They then, if they're chosen, and it's all democratic, so it's all about giving, again, the voice back to the people. Detroit Soup doesn't fund anybody. Everybody who comes to the dinner are the funders. And these presenters have 4 minutes to share their idea, 4 questions back from the diners. And then the diners get a chance to eat, share, connect, and vote on what project they think should win the money from the door.
Wow.
And the door is a $5 suggested donation. Some folks in our neighborhood can't afford the $5, while others throw in like a $20. And it's about you bringing everything that you know and your access to resources, or maybe an idea is striking up something that you're passionate about. Also, it's a potluck dinner. So if you bring food, you have the opportunity to speak in front of the group and share up to 60 seconds of something that you're working on, a question that you have. Maybe you just moved in to the community. It's a place for connection. And really, all we do is open up the doors. We maybe put up 10 tables with maybe 60 chairs. We get anywhere from 200 to 400 people at the dinner. Most people are either sitting on the floor or we have a couple of bleachers. But it's really about having that shared experience of these ideas and then feeling, you know, hopefully I've done my job as the MC to say, hey, while you're waiting in line, while you're sitting at your tables, having a conversation with those around you, saying what idea do you want to vote for. And because you're looking, because there are no silos, it's not just around art, but it's about anything at any level in any state. They can, you know, your values and your stories automatically come out about things that you value and how you heard and perceived what was shared. It mimics a little bit of Shark Tank, right, because you're pitching it. But the difference is there's not a panel of judges. You yourself is the judge. And you can choose to be as much of an asshole or not an asshole at all about how you react to those who are pitching. You can close yourself off by walking in the room, or you can open yourself up. You can talk to nobody, or you can talk to everybody. It's up to you. And I tell everybody, this is not a TV show. These are your neighbors. These are 4 people from the community who are thinking about things. Though you paid money at the door, this isn't an entertainment. This is not a pitch competition. These are four people who are sharing their ideas, sharing how they think that they can solve for X, and are on their journey. And if you want to participate alongside of them, you're more than welcome to. Or you can give your $5, you can vote, and you can leave. I mean, I don't care. It's not my experience. It's yours,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I often don't vote at the dinners, only because in the past we've become tiebreakers. But really, I don't care. I say this with all the love of my heart, don't care what the outcome is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not my responsibility. It's not my vision of how I think the city should happen. I think, you know, we all come with our own stuff and our own values. And, you know, there's four voices in the room, and hopefully all four of those voices were connected with something as they exited the room.
Yeah, I really understand that I don't care, because that's actually compassion. I would call it a compassionate detachment, that you're giving fully of your heart but detached from outcome, which is really the only way to truly give and serve, is that if you're attached to the outcome, or you're worried about convincing someone, or you're worried about how they receive it. And it's kind of like giving a gift at Christmas and then calling somebody up every day to see if they enjoyed it and they liked it. And so that's a really empowering place to say, hey, I'm giving fully, I'm serving, and I don't care, meaning I am detached from what you do from it, which is really puts the responsibility, like you said. It's not, and that's another empowering thing I just loved hearing you say, which is, it's not my responsibility, that the responsibility is up to the individual, that each person is responsible for their experience and how they choose to go through it. And that's a level of really powerful leadership, of when the leader is actually invisible. The leader is actually the one that is in the background and is able to hold such a space that people are able to really move forward from that place of autonomy and sovereignty, which really leads them to greater community and interdependence. So what a powerful statement and knowing and embodiment that you hold. And I love what you said earlier as well, of the that you're holding in the energy field, that people already have it's within you, and I'm just giving the voice back to you. It's not, I'm not trying to convince you of anything. I'm not trying to shove any theology down your throat. It's you come in here, and you it's like I can just feel it. You're saying to people, step into your own, step, that this is about you stepping into being a full participant in what's happening here.
Yeah. I think we always sit around. I think there's often, I'm sure we've all done it. We sat around we met with a group of friends at a restaurant, and we solved all the world's problems, and we get up and we leave the solution at that dinner table. And we also, you know, when I first moved to Detroit, there was such a narrative of like complaining of the problems, but it's like, well, then who's doing what and who's stepping up? And then if someone's doing something, like, why are you complaining about it? At least they're doing something. And I think that was, like, the power of the beginning of Soup, is that we really were allowing people who are actually doing something a platform to share their thoughts and their ideas, and to really receive feedback. I mean, a lot of folks who pitch at Soup are like, well, you know, I'm not really interested in winning the money. I'm really about getting the feedback and how people are responding to it. And how people are, you know, these are not just, like, this is real. Like, these people are struggling to get their idea off the ground, or they're always going to struggle to get funding, because that doesn't happen naturally in this community, especially if you're not college educated, white, and preferably male. That's real. And our community of Detroit is primarily Black. It's a highly elderly population, you know, and we have a lot of issues, and we have a high rates of poverty. We have generations of segregation, separation. So for me, I just really felt like this is a way that we can create safe space for a one-time, like a one night event for that month. And though you're welcome to come back, 70% of the people in the room are new to the experience every month. So, you know, it's people are intrigued. And I think people actually do want to know what's going on in their community. But it's a challenge. And you know, we do ours on Sunday night. You know, a lot of times people, if it's a beautiful evening, don't want to be sitting inside of a room. So you have to make a choice, and it's got to be something you want to do. And I think it's really amazing that people are really respectful of each other, that it's really quiet, that people generally want to hear the voices that are happening, and are generally encouraged to participate.
And I love what you said about providing people a platform and that they can receive feedback from their neighbors. And this is, I love what you said earlier too, that this is not a TV show. These are your neighbors. These are, and that you really hold again that knowing, that teaching, and that what we call in retreat or facilitation, we're creating the container, and that container, that this is not a TV show. You're not here to impress people and be at this. It's not a reality TV show.
No. And all that stuff is scripted, and they know that when they're mean and they're awful to, like, the contestants, it drives up ratings, you know? Mm-hmm. So we as the community love the spectacle. But change doesn't happen out of the spectacle. Change happens out of work. And that's why I think, like, politics aren't so glamorous. And we see that in our political climate at the moment. Like, when you try to make it into something that, you know, we can manipulate with our language or our words or our false promises, it gets up people's false hope. And I think that this is why we have such a disconnect within our culture already, of why we think that there's, if you really ask people, well, what did you contribute to? They'll say taxes. But, you know, like, how do you contribute to a nonprofit? Is there, you know, do you give to your community? And I think most people will say, well, somebody else is taking care of it. And I will genuinely say to you, there, you are the somebody else that needs to be helping, taking care of it.
Yes. That's powerful. I can't remember the one of my trainings was in eco-psychology, and there was one of the eco-psychologists, and I wish I could remember who it was, but he called it the UFO landing in the middle of a city, that there would be the "it's not my problem" syndrome, and that there's, to what you're saying, it's the "it's not my problem" syndrome. It's not my problem syndrome, and that you're
That's
really
poverty.
Asking. Yeah, yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
That's what poverty is. It's not my problem. It's their problem, and they should take care of it. But I think that if you actually ask somebody how someone gets into poverty, it becomes red-faced, blushing, have no clue how that even happens, and what the systematic effects of that are. And the thing is that, you know, if you are a general reader of almost any biblical, like a Bible text of the Torah, the Quran, I forget the text of Hindu, but there's always a general understanding that you need to help the poor and the oppressed. And that's real. And that's been around for thousands. That's the dialogue. It has always been the root of our understanding of faith practice, is that, you know, we could solve this a long time ago, but capitalism is a feisty animal. And I'm not saying that it's a wrong thing. I have no value judgment. It's just that because of capitalism, there is always a bottom rung, and there always is a worker, and there always is somebody who won't have as much as the other, or as someone who may be the creator of the thing. So, I don't know.
You said some really powerful things there. I think I love that quote that you said, manipulate with words and creating false hope, and rather putting the responsibility for change in the actual community, in the community that's feeling oppressed, and that, You mm-hmm. declare back to somebody, you are the person that you're changing. You are the hero that you're waiting for. You are the one that's supposed, that is not supposed to, but you are the one that can make the changes. And then, mm-hmm. and that you're giving them guidebooks, the platform to be able to actually make those kind of changes. I mean, it's something I see in whether it be any kind of healing system, too. It's like this armchair theorizing about things where it's like, oh, we're just going to meditate on this cushion and we're going to do our inner work, but we're going to take no form of activism. And I love the teachings of Andrew Harvey and the Hope and his sacred activism work and Thich Nhat Hanh, that they mm-hmm. there all these different traditions to you, what you're saying, whether it be Buddhism or Hinduism, is saying, yeah, do your meditate or have a spiritual study, but take it into action. And if you're not taking it into some form of action, then you're actually contributing to the problem. You're just a placid cow. That's not really making a change. And mm-hmm. I love how you're asking in your words and in your work, really asking for people to asking and creating a space for people to take responsibility mm-hmm. and to make real change. And that's really powerful.
I think, again, I officiate weddings, and maybe it's on my mind because I'm about to do one in 2 weeks. And, you know, I always remind folks, like, when they're, like, I want to write my vows. And I said, this is not a love note to each other. You can write a love note. A vow is, like, something that you're committing to, that you're choosing to, like, participate alongside of, that, you know, that as we participate in this ceremony, if you will, that's life, right? Like, I commit to these ideas. I commit to this belief. I commit to this action, that it's not just, like, a flowery love poem of, like, I think I like you, and I think I might want to, like, it's cute when you bring me cereal every day. No, it's like love is really, really, really hard, and we have to commit to that. The cereal being not just that, but it's the bringing of the stuff and participating in each other's stuff. And I think that that's, if you really want to participate in community, it's participating in each other's stuff, right? And I say that, you know, working through my own stuff, knowing that I think sometimes growing up in the church, I really thought that I was supposed to be this, you know, caregiver, but really the only person I can really care for is myself. And by taking, you know, responsibility for my own passions and my own dreams, you know, and the things that I believe in, gives you the power to do the same.
Well, I love what you're saying about that this idea of love being a gooey romantic love and just a trade agreement for some type of service, where it's really a commitment, a devotion, a dedication, and that that love that two people share doesn't belong really to them, it belongs to the world. And that when they realize that this is a practice, it's a way of participating, not just being an anticipant, but a participant in the marriage and a participant in their neighborhood, and to not just be this reactionary person to the neighborhood, or whether it be to the relationship, and really coming from that place of what can I get versus how can I give. And it's such an incredible place to invite people into that, because it's not a cruel thing to do, it's a kind thing to do, because when we serve and give, as you see, people feel happy, they feel alive, they feel their life has meaning again, where they're not just talking about some type of theology or God or talking about some type of thing that they're going to do. They're actually participating in it, which is life wants to be expressed through life. Life wants to be lived. And I love what you said about life is messy. Yes, that it's not at this pristine, put it in these little box and it's got to look this way. That life, when you're fully participating in life, it's going to be messy, and it's what actually makes life joyful. That's being in the ordinariness of life, you actually find the extraordinary qualities that can be felt in that moment. So yeah, I wanted to circle back to what you said, because it was such another powerful statement. You said, you know, only the college-educated white male gets the opportunities, and the most of Detroit is black, it's elderly, and it's segregated, and you said, and just such a matter-of-fact statement, which is, I love the energy you brought forward, it's just discernment, like, yeah, that's this is what it is. This is real. This is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And this being so real and so happening, I mean, I live in very white Plymouth. It's 10 miles away. There's 12 miles away. Actually, I clocked it when I would go do a project with the Superhero Training Academy and do service in Brightmoor. I'm like, wow, only 12 miles away is one of the poorest areas of Detroit. This is crazy.
Oh, of all of the United States of America.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's
wow.
Real.
Yeah.
This is real.
Wow.
This is real. And maybe when you think of the access to resources that we have and the ability of change we can create, this is more powerful than going to Africa or going to Vietnam.
Yes.
You can create
yes.
change 12 literally miles from your house. But our fear of the other is what segregates us so deeply that we see our skin tone and that we're so afraid of for our own bodies that we're not compassionate for their bodies. That's real.
Yeah, that is so real.
That's real.
You remind me, I was sitting in a... Yes.
That's not something that we should feel sad. Like, Africa, we should take care of our street and then our block and our neighborhood and then our region and then our state. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And those
mm-hmm.
are the... And then our country and then other countries. Right? We can't help... If we cannot help others if we cannot help ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. And so what?
Right?
What a powerful.
So like,
yes. So afraid of other and it's like let's go to Africa instead of helping the neighbors that are just 8 to 10 miles away or 5 miles away. And then I was I was visiting with a friend to a different church, and it was solidly white. There wasn't one person of color in the group, and they had sponsored these. Two women to come to pay for their education from Africa. They put them up on stage, like, and I was just sitting there in disbelief, and everyone was feeling good about themselves, and I was just sitting there going, is this really happening? And these two women are being paraded in front as an example to believe in their particular, you know, believe as they believe, and here's an example
mm-hmm.
of how good we are and how great we are, yeah, and not helping the neighbors that are just a few miles away, and then they were promoting all these missions to Africa great, I do care about Africa. I'm not saying I don't, but to your point, like to act locally, think globally, like act in your neighborhood, act that
right.
this idea of like let me save the world, but hey, what about my neighbor? Screw them. What about I just love the mission and energy of Detroit Soup because it's real. It's authentic. It's doing what you're saying. It's really making a difference in a very real, tangible, authentic, powerful way. And so just thank
Absolutely.
You. Thank you so much.
The last soup winner in June is this wonderful woman named Harriet who has been for the last 8 months coming and serving literally the soup that she's made for everyone who's come through the door. And she lives in a community, and she won money so that she can feed the kids in the community whose family can't feed them themselves. And she needed to spend $1,000, not on food, but for a license to the city of Detroit so that she could do the work. And I just think, what a waste of money in that sense. Like, may Harriet, and because Harriet's going to do Harriet and Harriet, but she's given more to the community and her little bit of giving. Right? Because she's on the block. She lives there. She understands the needs, and she is responding to them, and she's responding through the eyes that she sees, through the heart that she has and the love that she possesses, and to the God that she serves. Right? So for me, we have so much abundance, and so many families think that they don't have anything. And we need to find out what abundance really means and what are the things that we really need to possess. Is poverty I don't think we have a definition of that through America. What is getting out of poverty? What is value wealth? What is what is having enough? You know, is it having cable TV? Is it having access to the internet? Is it having a telephone? Is it not having any of those things? Is it buying a child a birthday cake for their birthday? What is enough? Because the Republican narrative that I hear through American dialogue is they should just be poor and have just enough, which is what I don't know. And I don't know what like being healthy means anymore. Because in America, I have more regulations on my body being a woman than you, any human, has on a gun. And so this metal object that we create has more protections on it than I do for my own free thoughts, my own choices, my own resonances of my own being, my own dealing with my own tragedy of choices of like how we're taking care of ourselves. You know, that's real. That's real. And we don't talk about shame. We don't have, as an American culture, a sense of grief. We don't know how to deal with grief culturally or in the church for that matter. So until we get there, can we just let people be people and let's help where we need to help? You know, 54% of our American U.S. budget goes to the war. So if we're hyper-militarized around our nation, of course we're going to have fear for each other. That's real. So the fact that we get to sit in a room once a month and eat soup together and hear about projects that are going to raise $1,000 and go on and do great things, but the battle that they, myself included, of raising the next $1,000 is 1,000 times harder than you getting a gun. So let's, yeah! Like, this is the culture that we live in.
Oh, so well said. And that's, I love what you said, in essence, too, that the idea that we don't have an understanding of all these different things. So, hey, let's just do what we know can work and can serve. We don't have models for grieving. We don't have models for what health really is. And I loved what you said earlier about how when it was like, that's not my problem. That you said that is poverty, and that does begin to make someone wonder, well, if it contributing and feeling that contribution to my neighbor, to others, feeling like I matter in that way, that moves me out of the lack mindset, the poverty mindset, into more of I'm here. I have resources within me that I can give. I'm never lacking, and that Detroit Soup provides that forum for that, and that way of moving people out of that, the mindset of lack, the mindset that they have nothing to give, and that it's somebody else's problem. And that we can make those changes, that's we don't have to wait for the government to be convinced. We don't have to wait for these systematic changes, that this can really be happening now. And it's such an incredible resource that Detroit Soup is providing. So what would you
say?
Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. So how would someone get involved? If they where would they go? What would be the steps that they need to take to get involved with Detroit Soup?
I think just be come to a dinner first.
Okay.
You can find out our dates at DetroitSoup.com/calendar, or if you just go to DetroitSoup.com, we have a lot of array of stuff of where the neighborhood dinners are, how to submit to the dinner. But just come. September 25th is our next dinner. We'll have 4 ideas and 4. You'll have an ability to ask your questions. You know, maybe you want to help us fundraise to keep soup going. Maybe you want to help us in one of the neighborhood soups. You can be a board leader for that. Maybe you want to come and help us set up. Maybe you want to help us, you know, those are the real things that we need right now. You can donate on our website, DetroitSoup.com/donate.
Okay.
And those are real. Or maybe find a nonprofit in Detroit that you really would like to rally around and really support the work that they're doing on the ground. I think that really is the biggest thing that I see, is really supporting the initiatives on the ground. I mean, there's 4 million people in Metro Detroit, and if every 4 million picked a nonprofit and really supported their efforts, I think real change could happen in the city as the work was happening on the ground.
And where is the dinner going to be held?
It happens at 2900 East Grand Boulevard. It's an old film studio between the Fisher Building and I-75. Okay. We've done our soup there since 2012. It's a large open space. Bring a chair, or you can sit on the floor, or come early for a chair that we have already set up for you. Bring a dish to pass, and come with an open heart and an open mind. The doors open at 5 o'clock. Presentations start around 6. So this happens for about an hour. And then the dinner and voting take about an hour and 15 minutes, and hopefully we'll have you out of there about 8:15, 8:30.
8:15. Okay. So DetroitSoup.com. Next dinner is September 25th, and people can come and participate at whatever level feels comfortable for them. That sounds like a really doable thing for somebody to do, to step forward. So thank you. I'm so excited for people to know about this. I think in closing today, I would love for you to speak a little bit about, so this dire situation that Detroit's in, I love what you said about there's more regulations on a woman's body than a gun, and you spoke about the other question you began your journey with is, how's forgiveness work in all of this? So, Amy, in regards to Detroit and the racial separation, the poverty, what you are on the ground seeing as in the social wounding. I mean, this wounding that is in the process of healing. Where does forgiveness come in all of that? How does forgiveness play a role?
I think it's starting with yourself, and I think it's knowing your own beauty, knowing your own power, that there are a lot of expectations for women, but not having to only setting your own, right? There is no beautiful other than your own, right? I didn't choose my race. I didn't choose my gender. I didn't choose my ethnicity. I didn't choose where I was born. I didn't choose my sexuality. I chose to honor the gifts and the talents that I have been given to me, which is if you're sitting underneath your talents, you're going to make yourself ugly. If you're covering yourself with jewels and with makeup and with expensive clothing to fill your value, whose value did you give? How did you give your value away? And so knowing that in your own humanity, in your naked body, is the only thing that you have. And if you're not feeling comfortable with that, let's find a way to do that. It's not starving yourself. It's not binge eating. It's not judging. It's owning your truth. It's finding out what you're passionate about. It's making mistakes. It's eating what you like. It's not eating to cover up your feeling and emotions. It's finding a therapist. It's telling your truth. It's getting out of a bad relationship. It's finding good ones. It's being by yourself. And it's owning your humanness. Right? We have all these roles that we're supposed to play, and none of them were given to us as mandates from God. I really believe that, like, the only thing is, like, honoring your body, honoring your truth, honoring your own journey, sitting in your own suffering, and understanding that you have every choice in front of you and being able to make that choice.
Well said. Well said. What a powerful, it sounds like that was many 20 lifetimes to learn that those truths. So thank you for sharing them, and thank you for vibing them into the listeners. It's such a powerful teaching.
Can I just share as well? It's one thing for me to sit here and tell all the good things that I've gone through. And I think there's sometimes you will listen to podcasts and think, oh, they have no problems. I have my own, and I have a lot, and I am going through my own process of healing myself. My mom was sick for 14 years, and the ability to, like, own my own body in the midst of all of that was lessened, and so I struggle a lot. And so though I own my parts of my truth, I'm still owning other parts of my truth. So I don't have
beautiful.
It all together, and I don't have, I am not perfect, and I suffer and I struggle. And I need, and I want that to be very clear, because I'm just speaking my truth, right? Like, and I'm releasing that truth, and I'm just trying to understand, you know, how to move on from that suffering. And so, you know, that's real, and this is my action, and I think there's part of me that I compartmentalize to make it the way that it is, and that it is so big, and that I have sacrificed myself in an unhealthy way to let it grow to this way, and I'm trying to get my own power back. And so that's also very real.
Mm-hmm. It's a yes, and it's such a powerful message, because it's saying, hey, I'm just like you. I'm no different. Mm-hmm. I got my struggles. That yes, I'm speaking my truth and going forward in service, but that doesn't mean I'm perfect. And if we wait till we're perfect, or wait till we have everything healed to finally actually come into service, we'll be waiting our entire life.
There is no thing as perfect.
Yep.
Because ask yourself who's what that idea of perfect is like, and then ask anybody if that perfect is the same. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, 1,000% sure, that it is not.
Yes, yes. And that people will try to idealize or make people that are making changes perfect so that they can really excuse themselves for making the changes in their life. That, you know, well,
absolutely,
that's so-and-so. Well, and I've heard that so many times, and I'll do the same that you did and just correct people. No, I'm still growing. I'm still healing. Mm-hmm. That, no, don't put me on a shelf. Don't place me up on the shelf with other deities and idolize me so that you can avoid being responsible for your own experience and coming forward. So,
absolutely. We can bow down to the altar of Kim Kardashian as long as is, or the family, all that we want, but it's just the avoidance of our own humanness. And they're avoiding their own humanness as well. So,
or in the case of if you're not a woman or you're in the capitalist mindset, bow down to the altar of some rich person that you're idolizing and thinking, well, they have everything, I'm just a schmuck, so why try? So yeah, it's
well, you should try, because maybe they own onto their truth, or like they had, you know, they come from a family that had something, or they worked really, really, really hard for what they wanted. And working really hard might mean is a sacrifice of a marriage or sacrifice to your children. Mm-hmm. I mean, we glorify male work and we push the work back onto women, but we don't ask men how they're taking care of their children. They're just as responsible. They're half of that child. And so we've overgiven power to women to take care of that, where they're just as responsible, but they get to work. No, it doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. You both have equal responsibility. We just have glorified men going to work and women staying at home. No, women, do not let your husband or your partner steal your joy. They are just as responsible. They might not have that same kind of connection as breast to mouth, but they definitely have their humanness inside of their child. So that's real. That's real. And everybody in each relationship needs to ask each other what that balance looks like, or that shared responsibility looks like.
Well, we could just do a show on really women coming into a place of real empowerment, and the place of not power over or power under, but how to be in a interdependent or real partnership. I'm just going to book note that and maybe talk to you at another time to have you come on just for that topic, because it's such, I can feel the passion and the wisdom behind what you're saying. So thank you. So I just want to circle back and remind people the next dinner is September 25th. They can go on to DetroitSoup.com. It starts at 6 o'clock, and you said you had everybody out of there by 8:15. And rather than doing what I go into a movie or doing some superfluous thing, come to the Detroit Soup. Give yourself that incredible gift, and you'll get to meet Amy and all the people that are making these kind of changes. So I know I'm going to be there, and I'm excited to meet you in person. I'm grateful that Rita connected us, and so grateful to have you on the show. Just thank you so much for sharing
your
passion and this offering.
Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate
it. All right. Take care, Amy.
Bye now.
Bye. And so if you'd like to check out those resources, again, for Detroit Soup, I highly encourage you attending and participating. I know I'm going to be there on the September 25th dinner, and that was DetroitSoup.com, where you can donate if you'd like to donate, or come and participate. She said you can help set up. You could It's a potluck, so you need to bring some food. And she also mentioned there was a guideline that if you wanted to start something like this, where they are combining, where you combine art, urban agriculture, justice, social entrepreneurship into one place. And so it's DetroitSoup.com, and there are all sorts of resources and information of how these dinners work and what a real on-the-ground, as Amy said, on-the-ground change is making in the neighborhood, the communities, and to really, it's such a powerful thing to act locally and to see this change happening and to get beyond, as Amy was pointing out and I loved, the fear of other and to really step out of our little boxes we create, and where that is where happiness is, where we move beyond our limited self-identity or the box we've put ourselves in, the box of hell, the box of separation, and come into greater connection with our neighbors that are just, if you're listening and you're in a neighborhood that's just 7-8 miles away from Detroit, or maybe you live in other, there's many other cities that have a very segregated way, and then just reaching out to your neighbor that's just 7, 8, 10, sometimes 1 mile away in a completely different economic situation, and that we're here to help each other. Next month, I will be having another incredible guest, Scott. He wrote Active Peace, and Scott has worked with in social justice. He has worked with prisoners, men, and coming into forgiveness of themselves. Scott is just a visionary peacemaker. He is a leader and advocate of bringing restorative justice to people, to, again, on-the-ground kind of work. He's a life and relationship coach. He's a divorce mediator, a justice facilitator, and he went to school where I went. He went to Naropa. I got his master's in eco-psychology and transpersonal psychology, like myself, and that's where I had the honor of meeting Scott. He was actually a facilitator on my rites of passage, and I also love that his foreword is written by Andrew Harvey, who is a proponent of sacred activism. I'm hoping to have him on the show as well. If you want any information about the self-acceptance process and this work, you can go on to my website at barbarawhite.com, B-A-R-B-R-A. White.com. Also, please Facebook me, Barbara White 1. I put out posts. I have a blog that inspiring messages to open, to activate, to ignite you into greater love, greater service. And I'm very excited about the self-acceptance process and leadership training in 2017. It is a powerful, powerful 6-month training where people walk out and really do know and know how to be an embodiment of love and peace and to be one that can create real change in others. They're not just that same energy, that same authenticity that you felt from Amy and many of my other guests, that you at the end of the 6-month training, you ignite and you open up to your truth and to your value and your worth, and you can feel that connection to life and are able to hold space and to witness suffering and darkness in the world, but still hold that energy and that vision of hope. And that when people walk out of the 6-month training, not only are they changed, but I can also happily say that many people that have done this training have started their own businesses, healing centers, and really, really grateful for how this training has really not only changed their lives, but given people the foundation within themselves to bring forth their own programs into the world. So that's a self-acceptance process certification leadership training starting in 2017. And looking forward to next month's show, knowing that as we just take the time to remember that we have value, we have worth, that there is a good within you that wants to come out, and that you've taken this time to be inspired. So thank you. Thank you for listening to the show. Please be an angel, a messenger of love. That's what angel means. Be a messenger of love for the Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. Let people know about this amazing resource in Michigan. Let people know about Detroit Soup. Spread the word about all this good stuff. I ask for your help in that way. Thank you so much for joining, and I wish you a wonderful month. Take care.